Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Della Torre.
Hello, everybody. My name is J.C. Della Torre.
And I am Rita Della Torre.
And we're coming to you John and Yoko style, live from our bed.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
Yep, instead of recording from the office as we usually do, we're in bed because I had to have emergency foot surgery this week.
Yep, that's right. It's not some kind of weird, sick thing that we're going to be doing here. It's because Rita is laid up in bed. She had foot surgery to correct an issue that she was having, so here we are. Recording live from the bed.
Alright, so this is episode 124 of Transmissions from the Bed.
It was terrible. I was just terrible.
And this episode's going to be a little bit different because we're not going to have a rapid fire this week because we have two main subjects. One, of course, is Guardians of the Galaxy, the big blockbuster movie that came out this week.
And our other main topic is we're going to talk about our trip to Hoolanta.
Indeed. It was a very fun trip to the beautiful city of Atlanta, and Alan and folks, everybody over there at Hoolanta put on a great show, so we got lots to talk about in regards to that.
Yep, and on top of that, as always, we're going to have our Doctor Who segment.
We're going to be doing three episodes this week.
Yep, because we're just a tad bit behind.
Yep, we were planning on just doing two episodes, but then, you know, it took a little while to get this episode put together because of Rita's issue with her foot.
Yes, I had complications.
So, because of that, we're reviewing three episodes now that Oxygen has aired. So, we're going to be talking all about that.
All right, so let's get started with our two main topics this week.
Ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on the...
All right, A-holes, it's time to do it. Let's go.
That's obviously our intro to Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2.
Yes.
Okay, well, let me start off with saying, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, you're always expecting sequels to, you know, never really be as good as the original film, right?
Right.
Well, not with Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy, the film was just as great as the original film.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I thought it was a very, very good film. Don't get me wrong. but I don't think it was to the level of the first Guardians.
You don't think so?
No.
I found it just as entertaining.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I found the movie very entertaining. It was a lot of fun. There was definitely some funny bits.
There was a lot of funny bits.
But the problem that I think I had with it was a little bit too of a group therapy session. You know what I mean? Like, Star-Lord is having daddy issues, and then he's still in love with Gamora, who's giving him the cold shoulder. Gamora's got her problems with Nebula, and then
Rocket has his issues.
Rocket has his issues, and then...
Don't you be knocking on Baby Groot. Baby Groot was extremely cute. Don't you be knocking on my Baby Groot.
And then there's Yondu, who obviously has daddy issues as well, or son issues, because he...
Spoilers.
He looks at Star-Lord as his son, so, yeah. I mean, it was like a big, gigantic group therapy session.
Well, I mean...
Oh, and let's not forget Ego.
Yes, Ego.
Yes.
I mean... That was
aptly named, by the way.
Yes. Ego was very aptly named. Yeah. Well, the whole thing about it being a family therapy session, I had no issues with it. To me, it was just further character development for these guys. I mean, they hardly got to know each other in the first film. And in this film, you know, there's a little bit more going on. And yeah, there were a ton of funny bits, especially when you throw in that Mantis chick.
Yes. Yeah, when Mantis touches Star-Lord, I mean, everybody saw it in the trailer, so they know what happens, but I mean, when Mantis touches Star-Lord and she basically lays it on how much he's hot for Gamora, and then Drax is just going off like,
oh, you must be so embarrassed.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved Drax in this film because in the first film, he hardly spoke, but in this film, he was actually the comic relief.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which was such a different take from his character in the first film.
Yep.
What did you think of Ego?
You see, I love Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell is one of my favorite actors ever. But his character was the most annoying, egotistical character you could possibly have.
Which is how his character is meant to be.
Yeah, of course.
You're meant to totally dislike this guy. And with good reason.
And with good reason, yes. Because he's got an ego.
Spoilers.
That's why he's called Ego.
Well, we don't want to spoil too much about it. Yes. But, so, of course, it wasn't going to be a Marvel movie without the Stan Lee cameo. And there was an article out on Facebook that Marvel Studios actually did confirm.
Spoilers.
That all of Stan Lee's cameos are meant for him to be the Watcher.
Right. And so they kind of played that up a little bit in this particular film. And he even had one line where he's like, yeah, in that one I was actually the mailman, you know. So yeah, they played that up a little bit. There's also some other cameos that I didn't necessarily know about that I don't know if I want to spoil for people, but you're going to see some actors that you know in this particular film. I mean, big name actors. So definitely keep an eye out for those folks. And also, one of the more interesting things was at the end of the movie, there are 4 different mid-credit scenes that they interjected in there, plus an end-of-credit scene.
Yeah, so 5 in total, folks. Oh, and on top of that, you're going to have to actually keep an eye out during the credits.
Yes.
Because they're showing a whole bunch of things during the credits that aren't even related to this film.
Like, for example, there's going to be some people that are, you know, dancing and that looks like they're on album covers or baseball cards or some weird crap like that. And some of the characters that they show aren't from this movie. They're from, like, Thor Ragnarok or the new Avengers movie, you know, things like that. So
yeah, so that was really, really cool.
Spoilers.
What'd you think about the whole storyline with Yondu? I honestly think that I love the whole play on, even though Ego was his real father, but biologically, but the person who raised him was Yondu. And Yondu, you know, thinks of himself as his father.
Right. And in a way, it kind of explains a lot of why Yondu acted the way he acted, not only in the first film, but also in this film, and why he basically destroyed his career as, you know, a mercenary for Star-Lord, you know, and the Guardians.
Yep, and everyone's like, oh, because Yondo's getting soft. No, it's because Yondu thinks of Peter Quill as his son.
You're right. And I liked it. I thought it was a good twist to that character, and I thought it was a...
me too.
A fun complication to the whole thing. And, of course, the Mary Poppins scene. Everybody has been talking about it.
Yeah, that was really, really awesome.
Yeah.
I've already seen some, you know, those little Funko Pop vinyl things?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's already taken a Yondu one and turned it into a Mary Poppins one. Which is funny.
All right.
I thought that was so cute.
So let's go ahead and rate this particular film. What did you think of the movie?
I will say this. As much as I loved it, I didn't love it as much as the first film.
You just spent last 10 minutes telling me that you did.
With the entertainment factor, I still think it's just as good as the first one. But I can't give it a... I don't want to give it a 10.
Right.
So
then you're admitting it's not as good as the first
one. Oh, hush up. I'm giving it a 9.
Mm-hmm.
You?
I'm going to give it an 8. It's a solid 8. It's almost a 9, but like I said, I didn't really care for the whole, you know, drama queen group therapy nonsense that was kind of going on in the film. I thought it was a little bit over the top, and it kind of got a little old for me. But that's basically why I'm giving it an 8.
Yeah. All right. All right, so now we're going to move on to Hulanta.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One podcast network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
All right, folks. So we just came back from an amazing, awesome con called Hulanta, formerly known as Timegate.
Yep, and if you listened a couple weeks ago, we actually had the director, or one of the directors of Hulanta, on to kind of discuss of what was coming, and that was Alan Seiler. And Alan, we got to see him, we got to say hi, and it was a fantastic con, as it always is.
Yep. It's funny how it all came about, because a month ago we weren't even planning on going, and then things just... you know, worked out in such a way that we were able to go, and we didn't go, you know, to work this con. We actually went, and we were able to have, you know, some real fun for once.
Yeah, and of course, we did work a little bit as we were part of the press conference on Friday with Camille Cordry, who, of course, played Rose Tyler's mom, Jackie Tyler, as well as Jamie Matheson, who is the writer for Murderer on the Orient Express. And, of course, Jamie gave us hints about Oxygen, which he also wrote. Of course, at that point in time, the episode hadn't aired yet, so we didn't really get to know the details of what was going to happen in that episode.
Yeah, I know the Hulanta folks were hoping that Hulanta would fall on the day, on the same weekend that his episode was going to air, but it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, just a week later. It doesn't, isn't that funny the way that worked out? But sure enough, I mean, it was definitely a creepy episode, so... In fact, let's let Jamie tell you a little bit himself, as we asked him a few questions about what's coming up with Doctor Who.
Jason with Transmissions from Atlantis.
Hello.
Speaking of Mummy, obviously there's this puppet master that's kind of running
Gus.
The whole thing. Yeah, Gus.
Yes.
Are we ever going to find out who Gus really was?
Well, I will tell you who Gus really was.
Okay.
Gus was a time-saving device to avoid explaining who was behind it all. Because we did have... The idea originally was that there was a kind of Max Capricorn-like figure on board the train who was behind the scenes, and he wanted the mummy because he thought it could save his life. So this creature that was thousands of years old, it was a case of, well, how is it 1,000 years old? Hopefully it can solve my degenerative disease I've got. But that's pages and pages and pages of, once the curtain pulls back and you see this figure, it's like, oh, so now we're explaining the big villain behind the mummy, are we? Come on, we got to move on. And it was like, we just wasn't room. So it's like, well, what if we make it a mysterious computer? That saves us a lot of explaining. We can just go, who knows who was behind it? You know, let's move on. But the end result is everyone's going, this Gus is such an enigma. We've really got to know what the truth. And the weird thing is, I can't really say anything. No, I can't. I can't. I was going to spoil something there.
Oh.
So close. It's not mentioned in Oxygen, if that's what you think.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's tempting to explain it, but in a way, won't it be a disappointment? And really, you'd need a better mummy, you'd need a better idea of it. Sorry. I mean, in my head, Gus is... it's a company that reverse engineers technology from all over the place to build soldiers. But that's just in my head. Hello.
All right, so I'm Rita, off of the Transmissions from Atlantis. My question for you is, in an earlier Matt Smith episode, there was... a reference to the mummy on the Orient or the Orient yes. Express. So is that episode an expansion of that?
The Doctor does mention it in Mummy on the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. He says, I've been, you know, Gus has been trying to get me on board this train for ages. He's been sending me mysterious summons and he even managed to get a phone number of the TARDIS one. So it's kind of making reference to it. But it doesn't quite tie up.
No.
And it doesn't quite tie up because in the Matt Smith episode, Matt Smith says, oh, the goddess has escaped from the temple or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
And it's like, so it's not a perfect fit. And it was more like Stephen Moffat going, oh, you've got to refer to that. And I'm like, have we? Really? Okay, fine. It's not going to perfectly match because we haven't got a goddess escaping from a temple, but fine, I'll, you know. And really, that poses a bit of a logic problem as well, because if Gus knows about the Doctor and the Doctor knows he's been invited there for a specific purpose, then why is he playing coy at the beginning when he's like, oh, there's no problem at all? It's like, well, you know there's a problem. You know you've been invited here for a week. So it's sort of the logic kind of falls. I'm criticising my own episode here. There we go.
But when Jenna says, you knew it was dangerous, and he says, well, I certainly hope so.
Yes.
It's one of my favourite lines ever. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it was all part of trying to figure out the Doctor's character at that point, because it was still... And I remember when I was writing that, and I had a couple of moments when he was really callous, and Stephen went, more of that.
Oh.
It was almost like, well, okay, I can give him more moments like that if you really want to go there. Because it was almost like I was just following... He was like the guy in the graphic equalizer, mm-hmm. going, yeah, more callousness. Turn that little graphic knob up there. People. And, you know, and you've got to trust, right, you've got an overview of the whole series season, so... I'm just going to trust your judgment, and if we wanted to go there, we'll go there. But yeah, it certainly works in the context of the episode.
That's all
I can't believe nobody's asked me about the next episode. That's shocking.
But we're not supposed to, are we?
Well, you know, we think that secret assassins will drop down from the ceiling.
BBC has ears everywhere.
Yeah. Now, all I will say about the next episode is that...
The Doctor runs really fast,
but a couple of people who've... Because I've seen the episode. Mm. A couple of people who've seen the episode have independently said to me, it's horrible. And they've both used that word, and I took it as a real compliment.
Oh.
Because it is horrible.
Wow.
And I'm so, so sorry.
Oh. That makes me even more excited to see it.
And I just go to the top of the hotel and jump off. And it's like, that's the last thing I ever say.
I'm going to email you right after I see it.
It is grim. It's one of those episodes where you watch it and go, oh, we're going there, are we? It's full on nasty, you know, stuff.
All right. And Rita, you had a great question for Camille Cordray as well. So do we want to play that real quick?
Yeah. And it was funny because I can't believe nobody thought to ask her this question. And I was like the last one during the Q&A to be able to get this question in.
Yep, so here we go.
In the Christmas Invasion episode.
My favorite.
Oh.
When the Doctor is going through his, you know, regeneration ordeal, and you guys are right outside the apartment, and he's going, I need. And then you start rattling a whole bunch of stuff off. Was that actually scripted, or did you ad-lib that?
That was kind of scripted, but it was confusing and kerfuffled because, you know, it generally always is when you're doing it live, properly trying to get the words off the page and everything. And when you're working with David, and, you know, so many times I wet my pants laughing. So funny. Such fun. Yeah, that was scripted, but not.
Because it felt ad-libbed.
Yeah. There's some bloopers out there of that scene. Yeah.
All right, so that gives you a quick taste of that press conference. And overall, what did you think of the con?
The con was fantastic. I totally understand, you know, moving away from Time Gate, since Stargate is really just not as prevalent as it used to be, and moving into a completely Doctor Who type convention, even though they do have Another Worlds track that will cover a lot of different things. Wholanta was fantastic. They had so many great guests this year, not just Camille and Jamie, but also Nicola Bryant.
Yep.
And our own, very own Sixth Doctor,
yep,
Colin Baker, who is a Wholanta alumni.
Well, nobody's a Wholanta alumni.
Well, Time Gate alumni.
Yes.
And so, I mean, and when we did the Q&A with Colin and Nicola, that was a great Q&A.
Yep, and of course we had some amazing con moments, because Wholanta is one of those cons that it's a lot more intimate because it's a lot smaller than, you know, like a Dragon Con or something like that where there's just thousands and thousands of people.
It's even smaller than Gallifrey.
Yeah, I would say so. So we actually got a chance to bump into Jamie. We got a chance to bump into Camille.
Nicola and Colin.
We got to visit with all four guests. And, you know, the amazing thing for me is that as long as you don't freak out on them and like, oh my God, it's Colin Baker, oh my God, you know, as long as you're not doing that, you know, and you act professional and you act, you know, you treat them respectfully, you know, they are just the nicest people in the world.
Yeah, and they would love to just, you know, sit down and have a chat with you.
Absolutely. I mean, they're human beings. I mean, we want, as actors, we put them on pedestals and whatnot, but, at the same time, I mean, they're just humans, and they like to communicate, they like to get feedback, and, you know, they enjoy talking to people, they enjoy talking to the fans, which I think is a really great trait, because, you know, there are some of those actors out there that think they're above it all, and, you know, but Doctor Who alumni, I don't think I've met one person from the Doctor Who family that treated anybody in that way.
No, I mean, every single one of them was great. I mean, all of them. Camille, whenever we bumped into her, I think a couple times.
Yeah.
And she always stopped and said hello and, you know, did a quick chat before moving on.
Yeah. And Nicola actually got to the point where she recognized you and said hi as she walked by.
Yeah, she did. That was kind of cool. Oh, and speaking of Nicola, during her Q&A, they did an auction for charity. Because, of course, they were promoting
The food bank.
Yeah, the food bank, right?
In Atlanta, yes.
And so Nicola offered herself up for auction, and she managed to raise $700.
Yes, it was shocking. I mean,
it just kept going up and up and up, and the guy who won the auction got to sit with her for like an hour and a half and just have drinks and, you know, talk about Doctor Who and talk about anything that he wanted, really.
Yep, and I gotta say that Nicola was such an interesting guest because, you know, her character Perry is one of the more memorable of the companions, of the classic series companions, because she basically, you know, she had a regeneration, she had a couple different doctors, she was one of the few that quote-unquote died, even though they kind of resurrected her, but, you know, it was a weird kind of gamut that she got to run.
Well, think about it. She was also the last companion for Colin Baker before he was fired from the show at the time.
Right.
So, yeah, it was definitely very interesting. And she is one of the... And she looks amazing, by the way.
And she is so, so funny. Oh, I never knew she was that funny.
She's always cracking jokes.
I mean, she was literally heckling Daniel from the Hulanta team as he was doing his little spiel in the opening ceremonies. I found that hilarious.
It really, really was a lot of fun. But there was also some somber moments. We did attend the memorial tea tribute for Sasha Zubar, a good friend, on Saturday night at 10 o'clock. The event was very well attended, and thanks to Rachel, and I can't remember the name of the other girl
who was
helping out.
I actually didn't know her.
But thanks to both
Alex,
of them.
And Alex, of course.
Yeah, you know, and Alex, Sasha's dad, who was there, for putting all of that together, because we were all able to reminisce, talk about Sasha.
And even though it was somber, and you know, Sasha wasn't there, and you really felt the loss, it almost felt... not necessarily closure, but it felt like he was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In fact, there was a guy that, oh my gosh, he was channeling Sasha. It was crazy.
Yeah, there was this one guy at the convention who, you know, we came up to him like from behind. And from behind, you could have sworn it was Sasha.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing he was missing was the trademark Sasha, you know,
waistcoat,
you know, the waistcoat thing that he always wore. But other than that, I mean, he looked like Sasha. You know, and I didn't get a chance to talk to the guy, but, I mean, he had just that Sasha vibe. It was crazy.
And Sasha's dad, Alex, it was so nice to be able to see him throughout the whole convention.
Yep.
He was there pretty much collecting stories. He wanted to learn about this side of Sasha's life that he never really got to experience.
Yeah, so hopefully it was helpful for him, and you know, he got to learn a little bit about a part about his son that he didn't know, and it was therapeutic for us because, I mean, we got to have our tea and, you know, got to see some rare family videos of Sasha, and you know, it was nice. I mean, it was very nice, and you know, everybody had some great stories about, you know, his impact on their lives, so it was nice to hear.
Overall, the convention was just absolutely fantastic, and even the dealer room had a whole bunch of new faces, and thanks to one dealer in particular, our team has a new member.
Uh-huh. And you saw him on our episode cover. His name is Dr. Boo. He's a monster bunny, but he's also dressed up at cosplaying as the Fourth Doctor, so he's Dr. Boo.
Yep, so he's going to be our new Transmissions from Atlantis mascot.
Yes.
At least for the Doctor Who segment, anyway.
Does that mean Dr. Booze has to make an appearance in every episode now?
Yep.
Okay. All right, we're going to have to get Dr. Boo in front of the green screen then, because that way I can stick him into every episode.
Yep, he's going to have to be in there somewhere now.
All right, well.
So, overall, I can't wait for next year's Hulanta. This year we did something a little bit different. We actually flew up because of the I-85
mishap. Yeah.
And thankfully everything went fine. I was in a wheelchair pretty much the entire weekend.
Yep. And then, you know, you had your surgery on Tuesday, so that kind of puts you on a loop as well. So, like you said, overall the con was great. I would make one suggestion. I did miss Stargate. I'm sorry.
The Other Worlds track did not have not one panel that really focused on just Stargate.
I think they should at least do one panel. Just one. I mean, it doesn't have to be an entire track, but at least have one panel on Stargate that we can talk about Stargate, or tie it into, you know, Egyptian archaeology or something. You know, something.
Yeah.
That way, you know, the Stargate fans that, you know, have been disenfranchised can still at least have a little piece of the con that they helped grow into this behemoth.
Yep.
But yeah, great job to Alan and Susan and Terry and Daniel and the whole crew over there at Hulanta. Obviously, Moxie Magnus.
Oh, Moxie. Moxie was amazing this year.
Moxie had like all kinds of different kind of outfits that I'd never seen her wear before. That was crazy.
She even came up with her own version of a Moxie Magnus Time Lady.
Yeah, so definitely some really cool stuff from Moxie, and they had the David Bowie tribute band, which was interesting. Just a great, great time, I think.
Yep. All right, so coming up next is going to be our Doctor Who segment where we're going to be reviewing Thin Ice and Knock Knock.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Where is the Doctor now?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Is that credible?
It's true.
You're the woman he loves.
No, I'm not.
She's lying.
The Doctor does not and has never loved me. I'm not lying.
Confirmed. The life form is not lying.
Impossible. This is a trick.
No, it isn't.
My information is correct. You are the woman who loves the Doctor.
Yes, I am. I've never denied it. But whoever said he loved me back, he's the Doctor. He doesn't go around falling in love with people. And if you think he's anything that small or that ordinary, then you haven't the first idea of what you're dealing with.
Your Majesty, I assure you, she is the perfect bait. When this woman is in danger, the Doctor will always come.
Oh, you are a moron. No, he won't.
He's probably already here.
No, he isn't. Of course he isn't.
Possibly on this ship.
Well, go on. Scan it, then. Go on, why don't you?
River.
Two hearts, stupid clothes. You can't miss him.
River.
Go on, scan the whole parsec. He's not here. God knows where he is right now, but I promise you, he's doing whatever the hell he wants and not giving a damn about me! And I'm just fine with that! When you love the Doctor, it's like loving the stars themselves. You don't expect a sunset to admire you back. And if I happen to find myself in danger, let me tell you, the Doctor is not stupid enough or sentimental enough, and he is certainly not in love enough to find himself standing in it with me!
Alright, folks, so Doctor Who, and we have three episodes to review.
Thin Ice.
And Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Doctor.
Doctor Who. Wee-oo. Woo-oo.
Are you happy now?
Oh, yes.
Ugh, God. Such a terrible joke.
Alright, so let's start off with Thin Ice.
Yes.
And the last Frost Fair.
So, there were some definite little nuggets for longtime Whovians in this particular episode. For example, one of the things that River Song had mentioned was that the Doctor had taken her to the last Frost Fair.
Yes, but I have a feeling that was probably on a different day.
Yes, but the Doctor even harkened back to that in this particular episode where he said, yeah, I've been here a bunch of times at different points. Yeah.
Which is funny, because it's a Frost Fair. How many times are you going to go and not bump into yourself?
Well, I mean, he could have come at a different day, you know. Maybe he set it up to where the one day that he took River Song was like the day before that he took Bill, so.
Very true. So, this was a really neat episode. in regards to, you know, the monster that was living in the Thames.
And it wasn't only the monster that living in the Thames. It's also the monster that was living in that one rich guy's house, and that was the rich guy.
Yes. Let's see. My favorite scene out of that entire episode,
Lord Douchebag.
Yes, was when Lord Douchebag insults Bill because she was a woman and black. But what I loved about that scene was the doctor's reaction.
Yes, and of course the doctor's speech, and of course Lord Douchebag is like, "Wow, that was an amazing speech. It would rouse anybody to do stuff if they had a heart. Too bad it's not your lucky day." And it's like, you are a jerk.
Wow. Which was, you know,
spoilers.
It made me really, really, really happy when he bit it later.
Spoilers. Yeah, so that guy got what he deserved. And basically, overall, it was a fun time travel-y episode. The Doctor in the past. I love Bill. The more that we see Bill, the more I like her.
I agree with you there. For some reason, this episode wasn't my favorite so far.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. There was just something about it that wasn't quite capturing me.
I enjoyed it.
I probably just need to see it again.
Yeah, I had fun with it. I enjoyed it.
But yeah, Thin Ice was pretty, pretty cool. It was also creepy when you think of those piranha fishies underneath the ice that can suck you down through the ice.
Yep. So, what do you want to rate this episode then?
Yeah, it's probably a 7.
Really?
To me, it wasn't a memorable episode.
Oh, I don't think so. I totally disagree. I would give it at least an 8.
Okay.
And, you know, I thought it was a fun episode. I thought it had some nice Doctor Who throwbacks. And I just, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
How about you, Dr. B? What'd you think?
It stinks! Okay.
All right. Well, Dr. Boo put it in his say. All right. So, next episode, we've got Knock Knock.
Now, talk about a creepy episode.
Very creepy episode. It's funny, though, because when you see a kind of house like that, for me, I would have moved in an instant.
Of course you would.
But that's just me.
And I don't know if you noticed, but that house has a history with Doctor Who. That house was the house that was in Blink.
Was it really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No!
Yes.
Now that is cool.
Yeah, same house. So, very, very interesting that that's the one that they chose to use, but I don't think that it's...
I didn't even recognize it at all.
Yeah, and that for that reason, I don't think it really had any connection to Blink at all. I think it was just one of those things where they just happened to use the same location.
Well, and you know what? Doctor Who has been known to use same locations
episodes. How many times have we been in a rock quarry, for crying out loud?
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about, like, for example, in the Angels Take Manhattan, the house that the mobster lives in.
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen that house in another episode that was completely unrelated.
Right.
Right? So, Knock Knock was, I think, this season's really creepy episode. In Knock Knock, you have a house that is eating people.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And then, you know, while all of this is going on, you have the... funny interactions between Bill, her friends, and the doctor. Now, you had a theory that you think that Bill was embarrassed?
Well, what I thought was that Bill was trying to have her friends not think that she's sleeping with a professor that's at the university. So she called, the doctor, her grandfather.
Yeah, and I'm thinking... It wasn't really about a sexual thing. I just think that she didn't feel like being bogged down by an older figure, period.
Maybe. But that's how I kind of took it. And one of the interesting theories that are out there is that somehow she's a descendant of Susan.
Yes. Yes.
Which doesn't make much sense since Susan was taken to the future and married some guy in the future. So how would her offspring end up being in the past with the doctor?
Yeah, so I don't understand that theory either, but who knows? You know, wibbly wobbly and timey-wimey
and whatnot. And another question that's out there is, could Moffat be setting up for us to see Susan again at some point?
Yeah, because there seems to be a lot of
Susan references.
Susan references and grandfather references.
Yeah.
In the season so far. All right, so back to Knock Knock. You know, we have the house that's eating people.
Mm-hmm.
And as the mystery unfolds, we discover a female locked up in a tower who looks like she's completely made out of wood.
Correct.
And at first,
spoilers,
you know, we're led to believe that she is the old man's daughter.
Right.
But it turns out that she is actually the old man's mother.
Spoilers. Jesus, you just gave away the whole plot. My God.
Well, we're reviewing the episode. Come on now. But this is going to lead into some strange questions because things are starting to not make quite sense.
like your speech. Not make quite sense.
Okay, whatever.
It speak no good.
oh, shut up. Anywho. All right, so we know that she gets turned into wood from these bugs that her son found in the garden. And for some reason, the bugs start to reproduce. And every 20 years, the old man brings a group of 6 teenagers into the house to get eaten by the house to supply energy
to keep her mom
his mother.
Yeah. So obviously, this leads to a whole bunch of questions, like, where did these bugs come from? We kind of got the idea of why they're taking all the kids. It's for energy. But why didn't they take the mom in that way? You know, why did they just turn the mom into wood?
Well, I have a theory about that.
Do you now?
I do.
How about that?
Okay. My theory is that when the son first brought the bugs, there was only, what, like 3 or 4 of the bugs, right?
Right.
They needed to reproduce. They needed energy. So instead of just consuming his mother, they turned her into an energy receptacle. So from that point forward, she was the conduit to supply more energy to the bugs. The bugs would consume teenagers, convert them into energy, and the old man's mother was the receptacle for that energy that was going to later be consumed.
Hmm.
But, you know, one of the questions you asked, and this is a question that was never answered in the episode, were these bugs extraterrestrial? Were they supernatural? It was never said.
And not only that, why did the bugs obey the old man? I mean, they could just eat the old man just like they eat anything else. They're bugs, you know. Why do they suddenly obey everything the old man has to say?
I think that had to do with the tuning fork. And sound frequencies.
Hmm.
That's the way he was controlling the bugs.
That didn't help him in the end.
Well, here's another thing that also didn't make sense. Remember when they found that one kid embedded in the wall who was not quite being absorbed? And it was because of a record that was being skipped.
Mm-hmm.
And the old man said something about that it was causing a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that the frequency was keeping the bugs from fully absorbing the kid.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that doesn't quite make sense to me.
And here's another question. So the kids are popped out, you know, of the house, you know, so after, you know, the doctor saves the day or whatever, right? What about all the other kids? Were they just gone? Were they just in stasis like those kids were? Or were they just bones?
I think that by that time, considering 20 years had already passed, you know, from the last time the house consumed more children,
that those people were just dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was probably energy that was already consumed. While these kids had just been absorbed by the house, so they were still, the energy was still there in the house.
And somehow still alive.
Yeah. So that's another thing. When the house disintegrated into a bunch of bugs,
where did they go? They didn't, like, blow up or anything. Nope. So where are they at?
And inquiring minds don't really want to know.
Well, I would want to know if my house suddenly turns into a freaking thing that's going to eat me.
Yep. All right, Dr. Boo, what'd you think about this episode?
It stinks!
All right, okay. Apparently Dr. Boo doesn't like Dr. Who.
What would you rate this episode?
I am going to give it an 8. I think it was a really creepy episode, but at the same time, there are some things in the episode that didn't quite jive, especially towards the end.
Up until the end, it was a solid 8, and then after the end, I'm lowering it to a 7 because I didn't care for the end very much.
Yep. So here's another cool thing about this episode, though. After the whole ordeal with the house is over, we find the doctor in front of the vault.
Yes.
And there are a few little things going on during this time that leads us to believe
whoever's in the vault is playing a piano. And the doctor seems to be very familiar with that person.
Yep.
So either it's the master or it's Missy. So it's either John Sim or it's the Missy character.
Yeah, because the person who was behind that door was slightly depressed until the doctor mentioned that there could have been deaths in this new story, and then all of a sudden the person perked up.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So I can't think of anybody else that would be that happy about death and destruction. So,
Yeah.
All right, so the third and final episode we're going to be reviewing is Oxygen.
I was a little disappointed with this episode. I think partly it was Jamie's fault because yes. He really, really hyped up this episode. And yes. I know he was probably being biased because he wrote it.
Yep.
But he kept going on about how horrible it was.
How scary it was, yeah. It was one of the scary
episodes. But it wasn't really creepy for me.
I mean, maybe it's our own fault because we're kind of desensitized because of The Walking Dead. You know, for people that don't actually watch zombie shows, it could be a lot scarier for them because, I mean, they're seeing dead people walk around. It's kind of, that can be kind of creepy for those that aren't used to it.
Yeah, and this episode was a little bit different because there weren't actual zombies. You didn't have people trying to eat other people. It just happened that the people were inside these suits that were still active.
Yes. And the suits were trying to kill people.
Yeah.
Because basically they were trying to save money. You know, for me, I actually enjoyed the episode. I thought it was a good episode. It wasn't the best episode of the season for me. But there were some interesting elements. There was a callback to the first Doctor with the whole, you know, piece of the TARDIS that, you know, where Nardole came in. He says, I got this piece of the TARDIS, so you can't go anywhere. And the Doctor's kind of like... You think so, huh?
Yeah.
So that was kind of a nice callback to the first Doctor. And in addition to that, I mean, there was a little bit of the anti-capitalism nonsense in this particular episode that was kind of, for an American viewer, it's kind of like a little bit over the top for me.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I get it. But the thinking that a company is going to literally dispose of their employees because
they weren't performing high enough.
Yeah, it seems really...
Well, it's like the doctor says, capitalism to the max, but yes, there are evil corporations out there, and we're not going to kid around and say that there's not.
But I don't think they're going out murdering people that are unproductive.
Agreed, yes. I don't think that's the case, yes. There are companies that do bad things that have bad effect on the environment and things like that, which is why we have the EPA, Mr. Trump. But, you know, at the same time, I just don't see capitalism ever getting to that point to where it's so...
If you're not productive, you're going to be terminated.
Right. That doesn't
sound... And now I don't mean just a pink slip.
To me, that doesn't sound like capitalism. That sounds like totalitarianism. So, I don't know. I didn't care for capitalism is an evil sin kind of attitude of the episode either. Maybe it's just me being an American and taking it personally, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, just overall, it was interesting. It was a little shocking when we did see Bill technically die.
Yes.
And I'm like, what?
And I still don't understand. Apparently her suit was not powered enough to kill her, and the doctor somehow knew this.
Yeah, I guess her suit was glitchy.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, it was just weird that he literally just left her to die.
But she still, you know, passed out and basically looked like a zombie, so it's kind of like, it just wasn't jiving for me, I guess.
Yeah, and should we mention what happened at the end?
I think it bears mentioning, and we'll put a big, big, big spoiler message on front of this, because if you have not seen the episode yet, this is a major spoiler. So if you haven't seen it yet, you may want to stop the recording at this point and move on to the end, because this is going to spoil the episode for you, but...
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
At the end of this episode, the Doctor ends up blind.
Yeah, so... He takes off his helmet to give it to Bill, and as a result, he does survive being in the vacuum of space because he is who he is, but ends up blind.
Yes.
And even though later in the TARDIS it looks like his eyes are being healed, they're not.
Right. So, how's that going to play out?
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting development. Are we going to see him for the rest of the season kind of bumbling around as a blind doctor? I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll be like Daredevil, you know, and the rest of his senses will, like,
kick in
and enhance and stuff.
We'll have to see, but the previews for next week's episode look really interesting.
Well, I think it's the part of that three-part epic that Moffat wrote. Well, yep. No, it wasn't just Moffat. It was, like, three different writers, but it's all kind of interconnected with each other. So right. I think this is the beginning of that. So we'll see how that all works out.
Yeah, this will be interesting because it's very obvious he's visiting a Catholic institution.
Yeah, the Vatican.
Yeah, the Vatican. Yeah. And I don't think I ever remember. I mean, mind you, I haven't seen all of the classic Who, but I personally don't remember Doctor Who ever going to this type of a religious environment.
Right. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that all works out.
And hopefully he'll get his sight back, like, soon.
All right, so for Octogen, what did you want to give a rating to?
I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
I mean, it was a very entertaining episode. I think maybe I went in with my expectations set a little too high for this. And it's not quite what I was expecting.
Yep.
So that's why I'm giving it an 8.
Yep, I'm also giving it an 8, and pretty much for the same reason. I had some high expectations based on what Jamie had said. What's interesting, though, before we let this episode go, I just wanted to mention that, you know, you heard some of this in some of the interviews that we played with Jamie. He talked about the challenging of the characters, right, and how he liked to ramp up the drama, and, you know, just when you think you had enough, you push them even further. And you could really tell that was the case in this episode, you know, where at the beginning, you know, obviously there's a problem with Octogen, and they have to get into the suits. And then there's a problem with the suits. And then the Doctor goes blind. So, you know, you could see him stacking the drama.
And then Bill dies.
Then Bill dies, you know. And then, you know, the Doctor has that big speech about, you know, you've lived a good life or whatever, you know, just... and then sets everybody getting ready to be killed, you know? So, I mean, you set the drama, you could see where he's just building the drama more and more and more, and it was an interesting look into how a writer thinks, and listening to him talk about that, I could see it in the episode as he's doing it, and it was interesting.
Yeah, I do agree with you on there.
Alright, so one other thing we wanted to talk about before we go in regards to Doctor Who is the ratings, because everybody's always worried about, you know, the end of Doctor Who coming or whatever. And so we took a look at the ratings block, and of course, the only ratings that really matter are the ratings that are in Britain. So the series premiere, the episode called The Pilot, was actually strikingly low for a series premiere of Doctor Who. It only pulled in 4.64 million overnight, and it was aggregated out to a 6.68 million. So that was a little bit disappointing for a season premiere. Smile dropped only a few bits to 4.25 overnight and 5.98 million aggregate. But then when we get to Thin Ice...
Thin Ice dropped a lot.
Yeah, Thin Ice Live was not very good. It was at 3.76 million, which for me is one of the lowest that I can remember Doctor Who going in a while. And the aggregate ended up being 5.51 million. Knock Knock did recover, and it's actually the second highest rated episode of the series. It actually pulled in a 4.32, and we don't have an aggregate for that yet. That comes, you know, later on in the week or whatever. I will say, though, that the ratings overall have been strong. Usually you want to see your episodes be in the 8 or 9 range, or 80% or higher, in regards to overall audience index kind of thing. And each episode has been at least 83 or higher. So it's been consistently good. This has been a consistently good season. The ratings are pretty much steady, except for Thin Ice. I don't know what the hell happened with Thin Ice, but...
I'm telling you, man, even for me, there was something about that episode that just didn't quite capture me.
But overall, I mean, the ratings have been solid for Doctor Who. It's not been spectacular. It's not been like it was in the David Tennant years when they'd pull like 10 million overnight. But, you know, it's still strong. And, you know, Doctor Who's still healthy, you know, so we don't have to worry about Doctor Who being canceled anytime soon. It's still one of the highest rated programs on BBC and, you know, still one of the highest rated programs for its time slot. So, you know, it's doing okay.
All right, so I think that about does it for our Doctor Who segment.
Yep.
All right, so that does it for episode 124.
Yep, and so next week we are going to be reviewing the new blockbuster King Arthur. We've heard some really good things about it, so hopefully it's going to be a really good film. All right, and next week we'll also have a new episode of Doctor Who to talk about. Also some new Doctor Who news in regards to who may be the 13th Doctor. We got another new name. Never heard of this guy either, so who knows. And, of course, anything else that pops up, Rapid Fire will be back. So we'll be having a whole bunch of different subjects that we'll be talking about. Should be fun, so that's what's coming up. And until next time...
Allons-y.
Allons-y. Goodbye, everybody.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y more often. Allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then, it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say allons-y, Alonzo, every time.
Serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, brandy, fetch another round. She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, brandy, you're a fine girl. A braided chain made of finest silver from the north of Spain, a locket that bears the name of a man that Brandy loved. He came on a summer's day bringing gifts from far away, but he made it clear he couldn't stay. No harbor was his home. The sailor said, Brandy, you're a fine girl, what a good wife you would be. Such a fine girl. But my life, my love of my lady is the same.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.